Time for First Tuesday Coffee Chat. John is unprepared as usual.
I don't have coffee.
he has not coffee today. Welcome. We're going to answer any questions you have today, guys. So if you put the word question in all caps, that'd be great. I'm here today with John Willis from Special Operations Equipment. I am here with Jack Spierko from the Survival Podcast. I'm Nicole Soss from Living Free in Tennessee. I'm going to put the two fellas up top. So it's balanced. Jack's like, what? Anyway, like the world's on fire right here.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah, okay, now I have an echo.
Question, Nicole has an echo, but not.
Now I have an echo. Question, why does Nicole have an echo?
It will be okay.
Yeah.
Might have to have you bail and come.
I'm going
to
totally bail and come back. So. You guys talk about the world being on fire, and I'll bail and come back.
All right, so John, the world apparently is on fire.
Like, literally? Like, forest fires?
I don't know. We're at war. Some people just lost their life savings in Bitcoin because of cold card. In the Bitcoin space, the BIP 110er is about to throw a tantrum on Saturday and have it blow up in their face. I don't know. The Spanish are being invaded by the Moroccans, and we all know it's not really the Moroccans.
I think that wasn't that a like the administration was mad at Spain for not letting us or not participating in the war or not letting us use their airspace or something, right? I heard something to that effect.
I haven't heard anything like that. I do think one of the interesting things is when you look at that invasion of people. And then you kind of, you just watch the video, right? It looks like they cross the channel and they're invading Spain proper. That place, Ceuta, Spain, it is Spanish territory. It's actually in Africa, which is just kind of odd to me. And it's very clear that the people circulating the video didn't do anything to explain that. I was like, where the hell is this place? How close is it? What did they have to cross? So I looked it up on Google Maps, and this is a little peninsula off of Morocco. And what I find interesting is then why invade from the water?
Do you remember?
Is it theater?
Right. Do you remember a few years ago when a bunch of them came ashore on a little island in Italy, and they said there was like 18,000 of them that took over, was pushing everybody off the island, and there was a bunch of, you know, crimes and stuff happening there too.
Well, apparently 8 of those people died during that, whatever it was.
This one here?
Yeah, the one that we just saw happen where they were all coming ashore. Like, they stomped on each other, drowned, whatever, fell off a rock and cracked their head, whatever it was. At least that's official number. So that was something on fire, Nicole. Let's see if you echo now.
I don't know if I echo now.
I am echoing now.
I don't know, man.
We'll just deal with it. We'll just go.
The NSA doesn't want us to speak.
I think that's what it is. I'm hearing no echo from anybody.
I'm hearing no echo right now. I don't know if folks in the comments can tell us about echoes or not echoes.
Nicole is good, but yeah, John is. His is not bad. Okay.
Okay, great. I'm going to take not bad as a win.
Win, win, win. All right, Nicole, you're back in charge.
I am back in charge. Well, the world is on fire, and a lot of those fires landed on a small little city named Spokane, Washington.
Oh, yeah.
Over the weekend. Actually, one of our community members lost a home, by the way. But they haven't, like Brian posted about it, they're not looking, they're covered, so they're not looking for any assistance. But it kind of reminded me of the Paradise fire. It didn't quite go like that because Spokane A has more roads out of it than Paradise does. But it was almost like it's not going to hit you. It's not okay. Everything's starting to jump the river, starting to come over. And I think we might want to talk a little bit about wildfire preparedness today. Because it's a different kind of amount of time you have to get out than a lot of other things.
It can be really, really urgent now. Like 2 seconds ago, you thought you were fine, and now you got to go. I think one of the biggest overlooked things by people that live where wildfires happen is ember guards for their attic. And people not understanding that leads to a lot of homes burning down that don't have to. It also leads to a lot of conspiracy theories. Like, how are these trees over here not touched and this house is burned down? Well, it's a great big living oak tree, and they don't burn really easily. Dry wood in your attic burns really easily. And it's something like 80% of houses that burn during forest fires, the initial ignition is in the attic because the ember casts. And if you think about these huge fires, and you get these winds, you got this mass of these embers popping and flying through the air. It takes one good one to get inside. And, you know, once that starts to burn in there, once the roof opens, once that airflow happens, it's gone. It's like a rocket stove down burn on the rest of that structure. And that's why they burn so absolutely violently, but some things around them seem to not be so effective. Because most people don't have trees that go right up to their house. And I think in people's minds, that's how fire gets there. So the number one thing would be protect your house the best you can before you even have to worry about this.
Yeah, you can do some stuff with landscaping, too, where you don't have dry stuff near your house to catch on fire, shrubbery and that sort of thing. What they're doing in California is pulling out all grass and everything and just putting rock in. Which I actually think Marscaping is not necessarily the best option, because if you have good, green, wet, healthy plants, that can really abate the situation. Also, people who rotationally graze their cattle. My cousin has a cattle farm in California. Rotates them, and then there's part of the farm where they just don't touch it or they hay it or whatever because they don't have that many cattle. And a fire came through her farm. Cattle were fine. Those pastures didn't burn, but the ones where they weren't rotating cattle burned. So there's a moisture retention that happens as you're rehabilitating your land too. And you're right, before the fire comes, those are years-long things that you can be doing to help improve the situation.
Yeah, yeah. Like I said, I really didn't know much about the embercast issue until the last big fires, and everybody was saying that about the, you know, how is this guy's house over here not burned and this one is, or why are these trees okay? And that's when I went down that. I'm like, well, why does that happen? And then I found out. So to me, like, and if you look up the product that I'm talking about, they're not expensive. I mean, compared to the cost of your house burning down.
You know. I've never heard of ember guards until you just said it.
Yeah. And well, I think John has a great thing, too, that he does that we've talked about before, because John has the Hall of Oddities, right? He has, like, a museum for a home. And when I looked at all that, I was just thinking, like, there's a lot of money here. And what happens if this place burns down? Sure, you have insurance on the structure. And when I asked John about that, what he said he has is a private Facebook page that no one can see except him and Amanda. And every time they bring a new item in, they take pictures of it, they make a post, and they put all of that information in there so they have this catalog. And I think that's another thing, too. Like, there are times when, like, your house is going to burn down. There's nothing you're going to be able to do. You know, you can't, like, stand there and mind will it away like an X-Men or something, right? It's going to happen. And insurance is important, but insurance companies don't make profit by paying out every claim. And they like to deny claims. And the more documentation you have, the more is actually covered. And I guess the other thing would be then, do you have enough insurance for the value of what's in your home? That would be a discussion with your insurance agent. Of course, they'll always tell you no. They'll always want to sell you more. But if you have a good one, then they help you evaluate that. Because, like, one of the places, like, you save some money, this is unrelated but related, is just, like, car insurance sometimes. When you carry full insurance on a car, but you've been making payments on that car, you've had that car for 3 or 4 years, cars don't go up in value, they go down. And yep. So then the insurance, your agent will be like, well, you need to replace it. Yeah, but what will you give me? Like, what is the maximum amount of money you will, if this car is totaled, what is the maximum amount of money you will pay me for my car, regardless of what it costs me to replace it? And then they'll give you a number. There is absolutely no reason for your insurance on your personal vehicle or your vehicle in question to be higher than that number. Because you're never getting it. Like we cut our, one year we cut our car. It was not a lot. It was a couple, $150 a year. It was $150 I have and they don't have.
Awesome. Okay. I am seeing questions and marking them guys, but we are also going to flow a little bit.
Yeah.
So things that Jack has taught about preparedness that are particularly germane to fire, being prepared for wildfire or tornado for that matter, is let's start with his documentation. So he's done several episodes on documentation, both of your bank accounts and things like that, but also routes that you figure out how to get out and drop points where you meet, as well as having a copy of that documentation in your house, in your car, at a friend's house in their safe, which I still need to do, Jack, and things like that. And if you have a fire come through and if it's devastating and takes out everything in your house, and if your fireproof safe did not proof because it went so long and it was so hot, because that doesn't necessarily mean things won't burn, and you have a copy of identification, bank account numbers, all of the things like insurance policies, all of those things, you have a much easier time than if it all got wiped out and you're there trying to figure out, it's like, well, I know my bank is at like Bank of America, but I can't prove who I am. I can't like all of, I don't have any of my cards anymore, all of those things. Cause when the fire is coming and you need to evacuate, it's not like you have 10 minutes to pack to evacuate. You're going to be lucky if you have 10 minutes. The only thing you have is walk out the door and hopefully all the animals you want to save are grabbable and you can throw them in your car. That's it. That's all you got. And so if there's anything you can have that's easy to go, it's got to be 5 seconds or less basically to pick up a pouch of something and go out the door. Yeah. It's not like tornadoes are coming our direction. They'll be here in 10 minutes or 15 minutes. I can go into my little hole in the ground and my hole in the ground is set up, right? So it's a bit of a different thing. A lot of times evacuations, I mean, sure, when it's catastrophic, anything, you don't have any time to figure it out. And that made me start thinking of bug out bags differently, where it's like you got the bug out bag, but there's the pre-bug out bag for me, where it's, yeah, like, you know, that one necklace that my grandfather made for my grandmother, which is not really worth a bunch of money, but it's worth a lot sentimentally. I would love to have that and my passport on the way out the door.
It's the document,
yeah, that's a
binder.
Really good point.
He's done shows on it several times. Jack's show on the document binder, just having all of your documentation and copies of everything. And then having a route also. He talked about having routes multiple different directions and knowing where those hotels are and where the things that you're going to need. And then as far as like a bug out bag for the end of the world is way different than a bug out bag for I still have to live in normal society tomorrow.
Yeah. I have a hospital one that I had to take somebody to the emergency room 2 weeks ago. Did I grab it on my way out the door? Negative.
No.
It was total prepper fail up there. I'm like, I got no water. I got no charge cables. Walmart's across the street, thank God. But yeah, that was dumb.
I sometimes wonder if bug out bag is the right term. We're kind of stuck with it.
Yeah.
I guess. I mean, some people will say a go bag, but a go bag, that's more of like, if you're an agent and your cover's blown, that's really what like a go bag is. Like that's your second passport and 10 grand so you can disappear.
You got the inch bag also. I'm never coming home.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we need to just like, one of the big things you can do is a lot of stuff that you would need should probably be in a bigger bag than you would want to carry and be in your vehicle at all times. Right. And then that way that stuff's done. But, you know, things like passports and all, most people with brains don't keep their passports sitting in a drawer. Right. You get a little fire safe or something. And then a lot of people in times like all their documents, they'll move into like a bigger strong box or whatever. And maybe they have some cash and stuff in there. You know, those survive fires, but it'd be better if you had that stuff with you.
Yeah. So thinking they about survive fires for 2 hours, Jack.
What's that?
They survive fires for 2 hours.
Okay.
So there's a point where they fail.
Yeah, everything does, right? So, like, I mean, and other things, too. Like, we had a very heart. We're going to talk about Bitcoin later, I hope. But we had a very heartbreaking story about somebody at one of your events, Nicole, who, during hurricane flooding, lost their seed phrase for all their Bitcoin. And do you know who I'm talking about?
I do. I also know a continuation of that story.
Okay. Did
he married the right bitch.
Huh?
He married the right bitch.
Did she save the day?
There was apparently another copy of a seed phrase somewhere.
Oh, thank you. I needed some good news. This has been some shitty weekend that we just had, man.
Yeah.
Like, because I like him, and to hear that makes me so freaking happy. So back up your backups, right? And your Bitcoin folks, I talked about this in the past. I don't know if I ever did a video on it. Make yourself a backup of this Vitalik in some way. Like, you could get a little stamp kit and put it on washers, and then put those washers on a bolt, and then put that in a safe, right? That's, unless we get in like total catastrophic nuclear war or something, that's probably going to survive. They make little titanium cards and shit too. Titanium doesn't burn or melt at the temperatures we're talking about. So do something to make sure. God, that makes me so happy to call. You have no idea how happy that makes me to hear that for him.
Yep. Jose says, is a safe deposit box in a bank a good option? Jose, the way I think about it is that is a decent option that does not guarantee the bank won't burn down and that box won't be compromised. But they have like usually a vault that's got really thick concrete. My way I think about it is how can I have multiple things? Like I have digital copies of identification that I can access in. Like also because if I travel in Europe, which I did this year, and get robbed and lose all of my identification and hope to get home someday and my phone's gone and everything's gone, I can at least reach out to my sister and say, here is a photocopy of the thing that's scanned, send it to the embassy.
Yeah.
And then you can get home.
On the safe deposit box, I would take the same approach to that. I've always advised people to do, like, if they have a RV, but they can't keep it at their house, so that they can just load up and go if they're using that as part of their bug out plan, and so they're going to get storage. I'm like, well, do your mapping, pick your most likely primary route out that is going to least likely be affected by the thing that would make you leave, and then store your RV away from home, so you pack all your shit up and you grab your RV on the way out. I would say take that approach with a safe deposit box. Like, don't use a bank branch that's three blocks away from your house for that, because if there's a localized fire, it's more likely that bank will be consumed in that fire too. So put some distance there in the direction that would be your primary objective in bugging out. That way you can pick things up from there, including cash and things like that. I don't have a problem with safe deposit boxes. I think that, you know, 99.9 to the fifth power, you don't have anything to worry about in a safe deposit box. There is one little glitch in this, though, and that is the government. And so prior to the Patriot Act, it was actually pretty difficult to get access to your safe deposit box. The threshold for a warrant would have been the same as being able to come into your personal property, right? It was seen as you're renting space. It's personal property. It's not a financial relationship. You know, to protect us from people in caves, the government decided to redefine the relationship between bank and customer and consider that a financial relationship. So the threshold to be able to go into your safe deposit box is the same as to be able to obtain access to your bank account. That threshold is much lower than a general search warrant like for a piece of property. That's just one thing to know.
Yep. Anyway, I think when things like this happen, it's a good time to take pause, reevaluate if you have kept your preparedness stuff together, and maybe make a commitment to change one thing at least. Like, look at it, because a lot of it's very like you get all motivated, you get all prepared, you do all the documentation. Life happens for 10 years and all of that stuff's changed, but have you updated it? You know, or have you said I'm going to start and you didn't start?
Yeah,
it's good to hear those calls when you hear those calls. And if you're hearing my voice and you think that's me, don't ignore it. It probably is you. There's probably a reason you should be thinking about that.
Yeah, and I know no one wants to talk to your insurance agent. I don't either, but that's part of that, right? Over 10 years of your life, you had all this insurance in place. Some of it may need to be increased. You may need to add something. You may need to reduce something. you know, like I said, with things like when you reevaluate your automobile insurance, you may free up enough funding from that to keep your bill the same and expand it to somewhere else. And if you have an insurance agent just always pushing you to buy more insurance for no reason, get a new agent. There's lots of them. You go to a chamber of commerce meeting, kick a table, 20 of them will crawl out from underneath it. So
that and real estate agents.
Yeah, real estate agents, insurance agents, and financial advisors. Like you go to a chamber. That's why I stopped going to them years ago. You go to that. That's like 90% of the people are one of those three things.
Okay, here's a question I don't know the answer to. If they freeze your bank account, does that stop you from having access to your safe deposit box?
The same paperwork that does freeze your bank account can do that. The thing is, do they know you have it, and do you have a relationship with the bank that they sent the notification to? So that would be my other piece of advice. I would go to a bank that I have no bank account with, and I would set my safe deposit box up there if that's a concern. That's what I would do. They absolutely can do it. It's the same process, but the entity must be notified, and they must know that they need to notify the entity. It would make it a little harder to find.
Yep. Okay. What does the Clarity Act mean for Bitcoiners, and does it affect stacking, which kind of knocks out two questions? Oh, from the same person, so that's great.
Yeah, he has lots of questions. It's Jake 2.0. this is a... In essence, really, no. Clarity has been something that's been raged against by the purists. It is more about stable coins and crypto in general than Bitcoin. What it may do for Bitcoin that would be really big is if they don't strip it out. Things get stripped out all the time, though. A $600 de minimis exception on spending, which is per transaction. So a lot of people that want people to use Bitcoin as money and spend it don't understand that. The accounting nightmare alone, right? Nobody wants to pay capital gains because they spent some of their money. But even with a loss, just like tracking each transaction, it is so infinitesimally a pain in the ass. Like if I'm buying a car with Bitcoin, sure, I can sit down and figure out all my UTXOs that it's going to come out of and figure out, you know, the gain or the loss. But like if I'm going to go to the store and I'm going to buy $150 worth of groceries with Bitcoin or something like that, It's just too tedious, and it's tax policy that has been the biggest impediment to people using Bitcoin as money. So that would be the one big bright side for us. Otherwise, it's really about banks being able to create their own stable coins, which they technically can do already, but it's supposed to pave the way for that. And it's supposed to give people clarity as to how the government's going to treat crypto. So it's not about Bitcoin. It's about the whole space. And it's one of those things I'm not real worried about. It's not going to prevent you from stacking anything. There's no attack on self-custody. Good luck with that anyway. You really can't stop code. It's not that important to me.
When you bought your car, did the dealership take actual Bitcoin, or did you have to convert to dollars?
I had to. See, that's the other thing. Like, unless the other side's going to take it. And so I did use Bitcoin to buy my car. I never Lamboed, but I did Challenger. But no, they wouldn't take it. They just wouldn't. It's like, can I do this? No, we won't do it. And they don't want it for the same reason, right? It creates an accounting nightmare. That's what people don't understand. It's tax policy. It's also Gresham's law, right? Like, if you get a handful of change, John, and you go to put it in your pocket and you hear a different clink and you look in there and you see a quarter from like 1960, what happens to that quarter?
Right.
It goes, and you don't spend it. You put it in your silver stack, right? And so there's some of that going on with Bitcoin. Why would I spend the best money when I can spend the shitty money, right? That's the mindset of people that are looking with long-term wealth anyway.
All of your silver and gold exchanges, you know, JM, Atmex, Scottsdale, they all will take Bitcoin.
Yep.
You can straight pay with it.
Yep.
Yep. I had somebody buy coffee with silver. Guess who it was?
Eric?
Somebody you know.
I'm sure. Jake?
John Bush.
Oh, John Bush. Okay, cool. That doesn't surprise me at all.
Yeah, he's like, can I buy with silver? I'm like, I don't care what you pay with. So it's...
And that's the other thing, right? So you can do that up to a certain point, but if everybody wanted to buy coffee in silver, if 90% of your sales were in silver, then you'd have to start factoring in the fact that when it says silver is $61... And you go to sell your silver, you don't get $61. You maybe get $56. And I think there were a lot of people that got a big wake up call, that big surge we had, right? Silver went up to like, what was it, like $118 or something? But stores were paying like $80. Like, that's a huge, because they knew it was such a short-term thing. They didn't want to be stuck with it.
Yeah. Well, and that makes sense to me. But, you know, once in a while, that just puts silver in my safe, right?
Yeah. You know, I get about 10% of my orders are either in, actually, I'd say now it's 10% Bitcoin and very few in silver. I get maybe one a year in silver. When I started back in 08, well, I introduced the members program in 09. We would get, I bet you 15% of our orders were by the mail, and half of those were silver. Half of them were cash, check, whatever. People didn't want us to pay online. And we got almost no Bitcoin orders when I first opened that. Now I probably get 10% of my orders in Bitcoin.
Well, I get less. I get fewer Bitcoin orders now than I used to, oddly enough, in the last year.
That's weird because it's down.
Yeah, almost as if people were like, maybe I should hang on to my Bitcoin now.
Yeah.
Anyway. We did forget one fire question. Doesn't the heat suck all the moisture out of green plants during a fire? If it goes on long enough, it does.
Well, there has to be something around the green plants to burn, right? I mean, think about the basic strategy of firefighting when they have equipment and time, and there's a fire coming this way. If there's a bulldozer, what do? They push your brake, right?
Yeah, they make a break.
Break in. If there's not a bulldozer, they may actually start a fire here and use, you know, their own guidance and push that fire in the other direction so the two fires come together, effectively creating a break. Right? So that same mindset works. Like, fire doesn't run across your green lawn. Fire does run across your brown lawn. So your climate, how much you irrigate, all of that takes it into account. But, I mean, I've seen trees that clearly have been through dozens of fires, and they just stand. If you go into the redwood forest, the sequoias, ponderosa pine areas up in like northern Colorado, all those trees are scarred with like soot on the bark, and they're still standing. It's actually pretty hard to burn down a living tree. Now, I don't remember the species, but there's in the West Coast right now, there's been tons because of the way they've mismanaged it. There's a
pine.
Tree or three. What was that?
It's a pine tree.
It's some kind of like low level pine or something, and it burns like freaking mad when it's green, and that's actually aggravated this. I think there is.
But it burns because it needs to burn to germinate the seeds. Like, that's part of its life cycle. The fact that we've not.
No, that's not what I'm talking about. I had a guy on that talked about the big fires in California. He was saying it was like some kind of laurel or something. And it's when they clear these areas, it has huge, quick regrowth, and it's invasive. And it burns like crazy, and it like explodes when it burns, and it helps spread shit. I can't remember what it's called, though.
Not a cedar?
No, they do that, too. But no, this was something I had never even heard of.
I remember that was a really good interview about fire, by the way.
Episode 3610, Mega Fires from a Permaculture Perspective. And I don't have it in the notes. You'd have to listen to it to find it. But that would be the
You'd have AI listen to it and make you a transcript of his podcast and look at it there. Or you could just listen to it.
Yeah.
Hey, speaking of AI, look what question just came in. With all the FUD around cold card attack, thoughts about on when AI is used to attack vulnerabilities in the banking systems?
So those are two different worlds, aren't they? Let's start off with the cold card thing so we understand what actually happened. It is probably not the case that AI was actually used to steal the money. AI was used to find the vulnerability. And so for that to track, you have to understand what the vulnerability was. So the vulnerability was... The cold card is a completely air-gapped device, meaning you never plug it into a computer ever at any time. And that made it supposedly the gold standard for security. So when you generated a seed phrase with it, instead of generating your own through a dice roll, an offline dice roll or something like that, it was supposed to use true random number generation is what it's called. It's the protocol. And that is where you're getting a full 256-bit encryption. With SHA-256, and it's, you know, it would take every computer on the planet longer than a human lifetime to find one, is basically how that works. What happened with Cold Card was they had an error in the firmware the light code that lives in the device, not the software. And it failed to do true random number generation. And what it did was pseudo random number generation, which sounds conspiratorial, like an AI hallucination or anything, but it wasn't. It was just a failsafe in the code. If this doesn't work, then use that, which is complete incompetence, and they're going to get sued into oblivion, whatever's left of them picked to the bones because of that. So when Bill got his cold card and did not create his own phrase and just let cold card do it, it used this pseudo random number generation. Well, the way that works on a device like that, since there's not a lot going on with it, is it'll take something like the address of a chip or a serial number of a chip. And I don't know exactly what it was it used, but it started from that point to create randomness, which makes randomness predictable. But then when you're building something like that, what does that mean? Like, all you're going to buy a case of these chipsets or whatever. So they're all sequential. So they all, it was like a 1, 2, 3. It's like, it's as bad as Spaceballs. What's the combination to the air shields? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That's what an idiot would have on his luggage. And the president's like, I better change the combination on my luggage. It's kind of like that. So that had a starting point. So it's likely that AI found that vulnerability. Once you know that, it's just brute force GPU attack. And because you're not trying to get into one thing, all you're trying to do is guess a phrase. You're doing basically a trillion calculations per crack, and that sounds like really hard, but not with modern computing equipment. The odds of finding one, if it's done right, 1 in 340 undecillion. Okay, that's a number none of our brains can get around. That's all the atoms in the known universe. We owe $40 trillion in debt. A trillion's not that big of a number in that space. So that's how it was done. And that's why if you had a cold card and you did with the one saving grace to all these influencers that recommended it, every one of them said, roll a dice 100 times for your numbers and make your own seed phrase for what's called entropy, right? Cryptographic entropy. But most people don't do that. So that's why that happened. So how does that relate to the banks? It doesn't. There's nothing about that that relates to the banks. Could the bank security be vulnerable? Yeah. And I would actually say that's more of a quantum concern than an AI concern, right? Though we don't know. What if there was some new thing, Face something or whatever, was just Hugging Face, was just hacked by a GPT agent? Like, it was being used for vulnerability testing, but it escaped. It got out of the moat, and it hacked into this service and got access to it. So who knows?
Yeah, I mean, it's possible. Like, the AI attacks I see being really successful are the ones that mimic and trick people into giving up their passwords, or even, like, the phone calls apparently are becoming really, really convincing now.
That's a big one.
Like, my mom got closed out of her email a week ago, and I'm the admin for that, and she called me, and I wasn't near a computer to fix it, and I was like, but why are you locked out? Like, what did you do? Well, I got a notice I had to turn on two-factor authentication. And I was like, oh, no. And the answer was it was actually indeed an email from the provider.
Gmail or whatever.
Okay. Yeah, and they did close. They didn't. She thought she lost her email, but they just blocked. They were just like, nobody's logging in until this is taken care of. And when I heard that, I'm like, man, anytime like something like that comes, call a friend if you're not sure. Like, yeah. It's better to do that and not panic and log into your bank off of an email from your bank than to log into somebody else's system with your bank password, because that's where I see the most coming from.
This is critical right now, too. Right back to cold card. It's already started. I've had 4 or 5 dozen emails. Dear cold card customer, we have a tool for you to evaluate this or whatever, or, you know, here's how you can recoup your funds. Like, it was immediate that was jumped on, and this will go on for years. And there's been a rash of these lately. And yeah, there's a lot of them that are like, schedule a call. That's the new scam. They get you on the phone. And for some reason, a lot of those seem like if you hover over the link to see where it goes, they're routed through a Telegram address, but they don't go to Telegram. They're like a redirect to go to wherever, you know, to create some kind of Calendarly clone or something where you make an appointment to speak with a representative. And that's, you know, if a person doesn't know all this kind of stuff we're talking about, that's incredibly convincing. Why would a scammer ask me to call them? Well, they do all the time.
Yeah.
I call them, too. I love life. It's fun. You know, I call the scammers. Not that way, because then they have too much information. But, like, when you get that email that says, you know, we just charged you for Genius Squad or whatever from PayPal, and you pick the phone up, and on the first ring it answers, the guy's like, hello, PayPal support. You're like, no, you're not. No, you're not. PayPal does not have a live human answer on the first ring. That's not a thing. But I tap them along, you know, what's the number on it or whatever, and then they get really mad and they say bad things about my mother and, you know, whatever, like I care. And then they hang up and then I call them back. And you get about four of those before they block your number. And every once in a while I put that number out on social media. Are you bored today? Do you want something to do? Call Haji here and tell him that, you know, this is what's going on, and tap them along as much as you can.
Yeah. I like, there's a comedian who does that.
Yeah, I just scared him. He was great. That was freaking hysterical.
So what about pleading the fifth when you already have immunity?
It's another one of those I told you so.
What?
It's another I told you so. Everybody was telling me, like, he can't plead the fifth. I'm like, he's going to plead the fifth. He can't plead. He's going to plead the fifth.
He can do whatever he wants.
He can do whatever he wants. And it's very difficult because and the theater that Florida and Alabama and I think Texas are getting in on is perfect. It's actually justifying why you would do it, right? So a federal pardon covers what? Federal prosecution, right? A federal pardon does not cover being prosecuted by the state of Florida or Georgia or Oklahoma or wherever. So as long as there's any concern whatsoever that he can be prosecuted by anybody for anything, it's valid, and it's not the right use case for it. So let's say that Nicole saw something, but she was involved in something, and I really don't want to, and I'm a prosecutor, I really don't want to convict Nicole. I'll do it, but that's not my goal. I want the person she saw and has knowledge of. So I go to Nicole and I say, we will grant you immunity from prosecution under this thing right here for this purpose, right? And in return for that immunity, we get your testimony. At that point, can Nicole take the fifth? She can, but she's going to jail. That's how it's going to work. So what they're trying to turn this into, and it's creative, I'll give Rand Paul that, obstruction of an investigation. Because you have immunity and because there's national security issues here, because if this really came from China, and if you have knowledge of that, and you have immunity from prosecution for that, then you are obstructing an investigation. But, you know, you got DeSantis down there going, well, we're going to prosecute him. And his lawyer can just go, see? Additionally, I would love to see this guy in an orange jumpsuit for the rest of his life, or worse. However, from a legal standpoint, there was no other thing to do. Like, any lawyer that told him to do anything but what he did would have lost their practice, license to practice law. Right? You have a part, shut up. That's the entire thing. If I were Fauci, well, this wouldn't happen, but if I were Fauci in his situation, I would have had a sign that says exactly what he said, like the coyote on a freaking cartoon, and every time I wouldn't even have said it. And when he was doing the stupid shit, like, can you tell us what color the rug is? Under the advice of counsel, you know, blah, 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 blah. That was actually strategically, I'm not talking about ethics or morality, strategically the smartest thing to do. I'm not answering any questions, no matter what they are, because then, well, you answered that question. Now you see how that opens the door. So legally, that was the most, I want to say brilliant, but it's not brilliant. Like, it's the only move. What else would you do? If you had a pardon, Nicole, and the only way you could go to prison is by opening your mouth, would you talk?
He's 85 years old.
Yeah.
But he's not going in. Yeah, he's protecting whoever's above him. He's trying to not implicate other names.
Well, and so I think these state-level prosecutions are doomed to fail, too, because how do you – they're going to do subpoenas. That means you call people in and you lean on them, basically, right? How do you do that? What does the state of Florida have on, like, some guy two tiers under Fauci that they can prosecute him for when he was doing his job as a bureaucrat standing under – what is it called – qualified immunity, right? as a bureaucrat working for the government, and he did his work in D.C., and Florida's going to prosecute him? Because what you would normally do is exactly what I said. Like, I flipped Nicole, right? She saw the thing. She was involved in the thing, but she's not really who I want. So I bring her in and go, if you don't help us, Nicole, then we can't help you.
Everybody's going to think I'm a poopy head after this conversation.
Yeah, right? But if I don't have that on you, if I have nothing on you and I say, we need you to tell us about Fauci, you're going to be like, so why? Why would I do that? You're going to just go under the advice of my counsel. I am invoking my Fifth Amendment rights respectfully. Thank you. And then, but we're going to do this. Under the advice of my counsel, that's what you're going to do. And you know, this is the bad side of something like the Fifth Amendment, but I think the good outweighs the bad here so much. Like, I don't want a government that can compel you to speak against yourself. I really don't.
Yeah. I would agree with that.
What would you have done?
Same thing. I wouldn't be in that situation, but
yeah, if you were,
if you know, it's interesting because it's also, you're not supposed to speak to cops, right?
Yeah.
So this was something when I took the tactical response training, I really wrestled with, because you need to give them a base statement and then shut up because you're in shock. Mm-hmm. If you've been in a situation where a firearm is discharged in self-defense and you can't trust your own perceptions of what happened because of all the chemical reactions in your brain. And they're like, so just give them a very basic statement and then shut up and wait for your lawyer. And I'm like, what does the basic statement mean? You know,
there has been a shooting. There has been a shooting.
Yeah. And anything else is, I will be happy to answer your questions after I confer with counsel.
Yeah.
And anything other than, yes, sir, we can set that up for you, are you denying me counsel? Are you denying me counsel, officer? Is that what you're doing here? I didn't think you did that, right? Masad Ayoub, who probably has more info on this than anybody, said that you do need to give an initial statement, because if you don't, they're showing up, and there's a guy doing a pretty good job of playing a victim on the ground, is the way he phrased it. And I see conflict in that because, you know, I just had a guy that was a former cop and what have you about security. And he said in that situation, the reality is you don't know what happened. So you say, I fired twice, and then it turns out there's a ring camera or something somewhere, and you fired four times. And when you said you fired twice, you weren't lying. That's the state your mind is in. Like, especially like somebody that has no military training or anything like that. Like, that moment that happens, no matter how clear-headed you looked while you were acting, if you did, you're not clear. You don't know what happened. You just know what you think happened. And that can get you into trouble because you don't know who's going to be prosecuting that.
Yeah, what their goals are about politics.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, Babylon Bee had a thing out. Democrats, because that guy that got shot, the In-N-Out shooter, right? Democrats concerned about armed citizens shooting bad guys or something like that. It was something on Babylon Bee. And it's really not satire anymore, I don't think Babylon Bee is.
It's pretty wild to see the reportings on that, because that happened, what, Saturday? And it was already out that it was Poverty Leader was the dude. He's got a YouTube channel. But mass channels reporting it yesterday said nothing about that. They said off-duty officer. And maybe what I think I know is incorrect, but I heard off-duty officer shot at bad guy returned fire, off-duty officer was shot, and the citizen is actually the second shooter shooting at that dude. But the mass reporting left all that shit out. Like, they didn't even fucking know yesterday.
Democrats express concern over increase in gun violence against active shooters. Is it satire?
So that one, first of all, the name of the person who was the active shooter is the same name as one of my relatives. So I had a moment with that, but it was not. Luckily, his age was lower. But I was like, did my relative go nuts? Like, what just happened? But also the guy who got involved was trained. So that was interesting. I was reading about the training he'd done, and he was basically saying, muscle memory at that point.
Yeah.
And he had trained because of the increase, what, you know, his perception of an increase in mass shootings and wanting to be ready because he was a vulnerable person.
Yeah.
And then thank God he was there, because the damage would have been worse had he not been there. And that's like all I know at that point. That's, you know.
I can just say from the little bit I've seen of the footage, his form was good.
Yeah.
I believe he trained. Like, I would have actually been surprised if somebody said he, you know, he's a guy who just went and bought a gun and went to the range a couple of times on his own. I would have been surprised to see that, because the form was classic, like, proper form in that situation. Body straight, eyes on target, not looking, you know, away from where you're shooting, no jerking. I mean, that dude, when he says muscle memory, I believe it. I believe that's exactly what happened there.
Yeah, he went to his training is what happened. Yeah. And that's literally what you want to have happen in that situation. And it would be nice if people who are inclined to create an event like that and become a murderer are a little bit scared that somebody might be hanging out nearby who's trained.
Who's trained and armed and willing to respond, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, when you think about it, that is a perfect example of like what we try to teach all the time across all disciplines. Everything's your responsibility. Right. In that situation, that became that guy. It wasn't fair. It wasn't right. But it became his responsibility in that second. And, you know, and then that person has to go take a life. And as much as bravado as gets passed around the gun community, you don't want to have to do it. Now you have to live with it. Like, you're going to find out that whatever was wrong with that guy. And yes, he needed to be taken out in that moment. But he was somebody's son. He was somebody's brother. He was somebody's husband.
Is the man
the love of somebody's life. Right. Like, and then you have to, you know, even though you know what you did was the right thing at the right time, you have to live with the fact that those people don't have that person anymore. And, you know, that's something, it's why we shoot at silhouettes in the military, so that you don't think of them as people.
Has the manifesto been released yet?
I haven't heard anything about it. I don't even know why the guy did it. Like,
Yeah, we don't know.
Well, they have found it social media. I had heard yesterday several people saying that. I never watched any of it or clicked on it. But they're saying they know who he is. Before, yes, there's okay. There's all these ramblings. The good guy shooter, poverty operator, was coming back from hiking with his wife. They stopped at the In-N-Out and were actually eating there when this all went down. And he had that pistol in a shoulder holster with the suppressor on there and everything.
The guy's name was Chad Williams. That's 24 years old.
That was the shooter.
Yeah, that's the bad guy, yeah.
Yeah. Twitch every time I hear it.
Yeah, he went to college in Idaho. No motive has been announced yet. Now, I don't ever trust that, because I've seen things like literally the guy shoots up like a Jewish temple and screams Allahu Akbar while he does it, and they say, we don't know why he did it. I think in that case, we know why he did it, right? Or the person, like, literally left the manifesto John's talking about. Like, we don't really know why he did it. It says on page 3, he's doing it because. But in this instance, I can't find anything that is obvious.
I like to give it a week before I opine too much about any shooting.
Yeah.
Or they're saying all the crime stat numbers, they're booking all these guys into jail, violent crime, and marking them as white.
Yes, that's a thing. I've seen the pictures, and you're like, it makes me think of like a kind of funny story. Back when I was in the military, we were lined up for some bullshit we had to do one day, and we had paperwork you had to fill out, and one of the things on it was race. And the dude that was like two in front of me was a big, tall Korean dude named – his last name was Grimes. And he was – I think he was like his mom was Korean, his dad was Caucasian or whatever. But he was very Asian-looking, especially with the Army flat top and all. And so he had checked Caucasian, and one of the dudes in line with him, black dude, is like, Crabs, you ain't white? And then it started the whole thing, like, everybody was messing with him, like, is your mirror broke or whatever? And when you look at some of these booking things that John's talking about, like, that dude's not white. Like, and I know people say, well, it doesn't really matter, but it does when you do it thousands of times, and you're altering crime statistics for a political agenda. And I don't see another option here, because it's not close, some of these.
Yeah. Statistics are very easy to manipulate, too. But then when they're not accurate.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're just there to tell a story, Jack.
Yeah. Whatever story they want to tell.
Yeah.
What is the agenda?
What is the agenda?
Never think about anything when you should be thinking about incentives. Charlie Munger.
Yeah. So how's your garden growing, John?
Oh, it's held over from last year. Anything that seeded, went to seed, is growing. I've planted, I don't know, 10 plants, and they're all good. We brought a bunch of starts in, and of course I didn't ever transplant them, so they grew through the container, and then they grew tomatoes and peppers and all bunched up there in direct sun. It should have killed them, but they grew. They're still growing.
Well, there's been enough rain that that's possible this year, I think.
Yeah, we have had a lot of rain.
Yeah.
These are so much biologic activity. Rabbits, you know.
We have so much rain. I have not mowed. 2 years, probably not at all mowed. And now with all the disturbance from all the logging and everything, I have these tall, woody stock plants growing that were taller than me. So I finally went through and bush hogged everything this weekend and cut 2 acres up here and 2 acres in the back. And there's grass down there. The sunlight can get to it now. And we're having enough rain that cutting all that down, cutting 6 feet of material down, didn't really fry anything. I cut everything at 6 inches, and now there's grass growing there again.
That's good. That's probably ironweed. That's what we got going on here.
Yeah, there's a lot of it. We got something that's
like big leaves.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
Like I'll go out there and whistle, and my emus will stick their head up, and you can just barely see them through this stuff. So all the animals seem happy.
Yeah, that's actually really funny. That means your ducks can find places to hide and lay eggs.
Oh yeah, there's a lot of the guineas have had babies. The chickens have. I think the chickens eat the duck eggs a lot. I don't have any new ducks this year.
Oh, I got all new ducks this year.
All of ours lost their eggs. It was so hot, I think, and they chose bad places. And even when our girls were sitting and we found them, you know, all of a sudden they're not there, and you pick the egg up, and you go, oh no, I don't want to touch that. Because it's really light, and you know what it's going to do.
Yeah, don't.
If you've never had a rotten egg grenade go off on you, I don't know if your life's complete yet. You need to experience it.
We heard one pop the other day, and I told a man, I go, that's a rotten egg somewhere going. Rotten egg. Well, and it's even worse if you pick up, you find a nest, and you know it's a stinker, and you don't know any better, so you toss it too hard, and it pops in your hand.
In your hand from the, yeah. Yep. Yep. I like to give – you can only do this once to them, but you give a kid a bucket and tell them to go get rid of those eggs because they're gonna have one happen. Like, you don't have to, like, prime that pump at all. Just go put them all in the bucket and throw them over the fence, and then you just sit back and you'll hear, boom, and then you hear, ah!
I'll take Aaron's question. Do you like – can you still just from a standing position – sit Indian style, or do you have to like use your hands to get to the ground? All that bending over, if you're going to grow tons and tons of food, of course you have to grow it in the ground. But if you want to come out and just do everything tabletop, if you're in the garage working on a project, do you prefer to have it on a workbench, or will you still work on it on the floor? The raised bed garden, there's nothing easier than raised bed gardens, but it costs a lot more to do raised bed gardens.
And they dry out, which does not matter this year in Tennessee.
They do cost more. I think they're worth it.
The best thing we have done is we just run 4x4 poles, every 10 feet, a grid of them, and then we just have eye bolts, and we put mesh up, and I use double-headed bolt snaps. A bolt snap is what's on a dog leash. So anywhere we need shade, and you don't have to put shade continuous. I can have it over here on the south side and just have a 10x20, and it will cast a 40-foot shadow. And that took care of everything, every problem we had with plants drying out. It took care of all of them. And you can get shade cloth that's 10%, 20%, 70%. You can also just buy really cheap shade cloth from Temu or Amazon, and you'll get a year or two out of that.
Yeah. Another thing you can do is weed blocker. Weed blocker also reduces the hell out of evaporation. I did that this year, and I've had a pretty damn good year.
Yep.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Here's I usually use wood chips for that, but I can see weed blocker working well. There he goes, bragging about his squash again.
Yeah. Come on now. This has got to be 30 pounds.
You could make a didgeridoo out of that thing.
So are we having Trombicino soup at the workshop this year?
I think it might happen because I have a lot of those. That's the biggest one, but I have a lot that are close to that big. I have tons of them I cannot get two hands around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would be delicious.
Yeah. The one thing about them, they don't have the deep richness of butternut. They're not as flavorful. So I'm thinking about playing around with that, see if I can draw more flavor from them, roast them harder or something, because whatever I serve, I want it to be good. You did ask me about the dates. It is the week of the 11th. I think the 11th is Wednesday, which is show up day. So anybody that's wondering about when our workshop will be, usually is the week of the 11th, Veterans Day. This time it is the week of the 11th. We've moved it back before because sometimes you get really kind of close on top of Thanksgiving. We have a full 2 weeks in there. So it gives us another week to be ready because, you know, Nicole, there's no such thing as too long to be ready.
I'm going
to
move all my red. I'm out of town notes to a different week now.
Yeah. Yeah. We're going to do some cool stuff this year, though, a little bit different things. Like I realized I can never grow enough mushrooms in one flush to do like a mushroom soup. So what I'm doing right now is every flush, most of them are getting in the Excalibur, and we're dehydrating them. And then Chef Ken's going to come up with something. We're going to do some sort of a mushroom soup, but it'll be like a side. But it looks like it'll all be grown here. You know, maybe we'll throw dehydrated tomato in there because I have a tomato apocalypse this year. I don't know what to do. Like, some of them are just drying out on the vines. I don't know what to do with them.
I was gifted 120 pounds of tomatoes a week and a half ago.
And all mine are cherries or really small. Like, I have these ones that are supposed to be cherries, but this year they're growing. I've had literally the form of the fruit changed for me this year with all this craziness going on with production. My cherry tomatoes are like two times the size they always were. My ping tongue eggplants, that are usually like a sausage, they're much fatter. It's like something kicked over this year that I can't really explain.
Yeah. You know what's really good with cherry tomatoes that you can't do because you don't have a freeze dryer, but maybe you have a friend who does, is you cut them in half and you salt them and put like garlic, pepper, oregano, basil, and then you freeze dry them, and then you end up with these really flavorful salt. Don't forget this. I don't know if I said that. Yeah. Really flavorful, crunchy snacks.
Huh.
They're really good.
Huh. Maybe Angie needs to try that. She's been
trying. Yeah, Angie does need to try that.
She's been trying to recreate those puffs, the cream puffs things, which are so delicious and full keto, paleo, everything. Something about them, they just don't ship. They lose that crunchy, sharp edge. It tastes like a clump of dried cream. It doesn't have that thing going on like the one she brought to your place. And that sucks. And she keeps trying, but I don't know. I don't think it's going to work.
Yeah, there's something in the packaging probably. The problem is you need soft packaging. I wonder if has she tried Mylar?
She's done Mylar, and she's done kind of like the deli cups with the seal and everything. Like, there has to be some way that moisture is affecting them. That's the only thing I can figure. And so, like, you're going to vacuum seal them. If you do it with Mylar, someone's going to crush them. And if you do it with something rigid, the packaging becomes too expensive, even if that works, because then you're bouncing around. I don't know if it's just getting the edges bounced off, but they seem to me like they're picking up moisture out of the air.
They might be. Like, I've noticed with also, it's very humid in Tennessee this year compared to usual. So it may be something she has to do in the winter. Oh, Ian's a chef. High heat, roast, and grill the Trombicino while building the soup, then blend until silky.
Yeah. It is what I do, but I'm wondering if higher temperature, longer, because it just doesn't. And I usually do, like, I usually do a butternut apple, which I learned from Sandy from way back in the day. That was her recipe, and then I modified it. And it's really good. But when you use the Trombicino, it's not like it's bad. It just isn't as good.
Yeah.
So I'll try that. I'll try the shit out of it.
Maybe you need the right blender, too. I got a question. When is Self-Reliance Festival? The answer is the Self-Reliance Festival is working in partnership with Midwest Preparedness Project this year. And it is on September 10th in Lawrence, Kansas. It's a one-day takeover at their event. If you want to sign up for that, it's free. You can go to MidwestPreparedness.com. SRF will just send you to their website this year. So we got a bunch of people coming. We're doing a whole thing with Bear, and I'll be speaking. Don Gorham is speaking, and we're showing you how to build an alcohol stove with Opalin, plus some fiber demos in the background. So if you want to check, the people keep asking me that. I have emailed about it, but yeah, that's the official announcement.
I've been to Lawrence, Kansas once, the actual town, probably not where you're actually at. And
no, it's a campground. It's like a whole different vibe.
Yeah,
there.
It's like left-wing lunatic hippies in Lawrence, man. Like, I went through there. It was when Trump got elected the first time. And I was at a liquor store, and I bought a bottle of wine, and I couldn't get a corkscrew with it, because apparently they're not allowed to sell a corkscrew and a wine in the same place. Which I don't.
We don't want you to open the wine.
How that makes? Well, I went back to my room, and I took a DeWalt and ran a screw in it and pulled it out with a pair of pliers. But while I was having this explained to me, this chick comes in, and she's like the kind of white, pasty white that never sees the sun. Like, if you touch the skin, maybe your finger will stick to it like that. And she's got, like, this kinky afro hair. And she's shrieking about how all her friends at school are not safe now because Trump. And they're going to come and they're going to, you know, do all these horrible things now and everything. And I've been on the road all day. I stink. My beard's down about here. I'm going hunting. I'm going up to Northern Iowa to hunt. I'm going through there. And so I look as redneck hippie as I can possibly look. The hair's long. And, I just said to her, I said, you know, that's a pretty awful way to talk about that many people. And she went off, and I said, I was just talking about that with my husband tonight. We don't think it's going to be a problem. And as white as her skin was, what color there was in her face went down to her feet. It was gone. She looked like she could have lit the way in the dark. She was that, like, flushed out. And she started apologizing, and I didn't know, and I didn't mean to offend you. And I'm like, that's all right. We're used to it. And just walked out. It was one of my funnest moments.
Yeah, people don't know if you're telling the truth or not out in the real world. If you're going to go to that and you have not seen the day after, you need to watch the day after before going to Lawrence, Kansas. That's the other thing.
Okay. Is that
remember that one? That's where it's at.
I didn't know that. Okay, yeah, that makes sense. That tracks.
Yeah.
That's in a brain cell from 1983 or 82.
Yeah, it wasn't in any of my brain cells, but I hadn't watched it since you know, the moment in fifth grade when we all watched it.
Yeah.
And I was like, actually, that's a pretty scary little show.
Oh, my God. I mean, Reagan said in his memoirs it was a big part of why he cut the deal with the Soviets. When he
really
saw that, it just, like you said, it went into him, and it wouldn't go away. He could not think about anything but that after he saw that.
That's interesting.
Maybe
can have an influence on politics, my friends. Yeah. Art by Lee Murphy.
I think there's certain movies that maybe our politicians should have to watch every year. The John Adams series, that would be great. You know, if you're going to shit on the Constitution, know what you're shitting on, right? If you're going to shit on the independence that we fought for, at least know what you're shitting on. When you say you're going to swear an oath to uphold and defend, know what you're saying when you're lying. At least do that for me. Especially, I don't know if you ever watched that series, Nicole, the speech that Adams gives at the Continental Congress, the final push that gets everybody all in on the Declaration, that 5 minutes, freaking out. I think Paul Giamatti plays him. Just outstanding actor, outstanding speech, very true to what happened.
I have not, but I will start watching again about November, and okay, I'll add that to the watching list.
That was a good one.
This time of year, it's more like I canned beans last night because I got 4 jars off the garden. So big deal, but I used to have a bigger garden. I'm kind of used to getting 12 jars at a time, but
yeah.
Last night, I'm like, hey, this is one batch in my electric Presto, and I can just hit go.
I did learn something about Excaliburs. If you want new tray liners, they're expensive to buy them from Excalibur. I bought some off Amazon, like aftermarket ones. I don't think they would have held up a grape. They're super thin, and they have no... And if you're going to get a dehydrator, get an Excalibur.
And buy multiple.
I don't know what they make now, because the one I have is so old, they don't make it anymore.
Yeah, you can still get those. Like, mine's super old. They've got dual door metal ones now, and time. Mine's so old it doesn't even have a timer.
Not mine doesn't either. It's not gray, but no timer.
Yep, and it works just as well anyways.
I would tell you, if you plan on doing things like mushrooms or whatever, get like the big tray one, because you need to take one every other tray out, because they're not going to lay flat like a sliced tomato or something like that. So you can't fill it, but man, 9 trays is a lot of dehydrated shit. It's okay to do 4.
Yep.
I need to bring you some freeze-dried mushrooms so you can play with those.
The new ones have a stainless steel racks, and I was going to buy those because they make them where they'll fit in the old 9 trays. They're $35 a piece. No, I can go to the store and get me some hardware cloth, and I'll build my own, thank you, at that price. If they were $35 for 4 or something, I would have bought them, but I ain't spending that.
I think I spent less than $35 on my Excalibur.
Oh, you got it.
I think it was $10 used.
That's awesome.
I had to buy a door for it for $20, so I think it was $30 total. And the first time I used it, I just took tinfoil and put it on the front of it. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, it works, but why not?
I'm not sure when I got mine, but I know that I had it before we moved to Arkansas. So we're somewhere around 2010, and that's 16 years. And, I mean, it gets used like crazy. And apparently, like, you can just, like, the only thing that really can go out is the motor. And you just buy a new motor in 5 minutes with a screwdriver, pop a new motor in them. People ask me, like, what should I get if I don't get an Excalibur? I'm like, it doesn't matter. They're all, like, everything is so far under the quality you get there. Just buy whatever you want, you know. Because even the cheapos, I've seen some of those last a long time, too.
Well, Cabela's had a really good, almost commercial grade one, but I don't know if it's good anymore.
Oh.
Like, 15 years ago. It was very similar to an Excalibur. A friend of mine had one. That thing was a tank.
So they're always white labeling somebody else's shit is what they're doing. And the problem with that is when that supplier stops making it, then they change it. And then sometimes it becomes hard to get parts.
Yeah.
Or they'll warranty something for life. But what that means is we'll replace it. But then if you need your warranty and they don't have it anymore, they're like, well, we don't have it.
Yeah.
Well, that sounds like a problem. And they're like, well, it is for you. And you're like, I'm going to do something. And they're like, go ahead. And then you're like, really, I don't think I'm going to do anything after all. Like, what I'm going to do, sue them in small claims court in my county because a pair of lifetime guaranteed boots have a hole in them and they don't have them anymore? Like, I don't, you know, I think the judge might get mad at me. I might end up in trouble with the judge for that.
That's what Oakley does. Oakley will have a lifetime warranty. But then every couple of years they change the exact same model and then the lenses don't fit and we don't have them, so we don't have a warranty for you.
So, yeah, we can't warranty it because it doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah. Ian says, crush freeze-dried mushrooms and make umami stack steak seasoning. Mm-hmm. It also thickens broth. It makes gravy.
I absolutely put freeze-dried mushrooms into a coffee grinder. That is a thing that happens. And it is, yes. It's also, you know, a really cool thing to do with it. You want them really freeze-dried to do that. And then mix about 25% mushroom powder into 75% salt. Make a mushroom flavored salt. It's freaking awesome.
Yep.
And I mean, anybody can do it. It's not hard.
This is a great time. Kiri has reminded me to remind everybody that there is an October 10th party at Special Operations Equipment. John, you got anything else to add to that?
There's a party October 10th at Special Operations Equipment.
You could like come. If you don't know the address, go to the internet and Google Special Operations Equipment.
It's free. If you just go to our website, SB Tactical Gear, you can RSVP there. It's free. If you're a vendor, if you have a product, a service, a good you would like to represent, just get a hold of us and, you know, we'll go from there. There's no fee for that either.
Olorosa is totally going to be there. Probably with cold brew. Plumber Mickey says, love my Excalibur. Only problem is I already moved to Tennessee and still have 4 trips before I'm there. Yep. Well, The year you move to another state's not the year you necessarily worry about how much food can you put up. Here's the link to the party at SOE. It's going to be a good time. I can't wait to see people. It's been almost a year. I was telling John, I like have not been out in a really long time. It feels weird. So anyway, cookie contest, question mark.
So looking at the Excalibur dehydrators on Amazon, they have completely changed.
Yeah.
The system. Yeah. I do see a couple of the original ones. Ours is probably 22 years old right now, and we've not had any problems with it.
Yep. Carrie says she's switching all her drink garnishes over to freeze drying. Much better product. The key there, Carrie, is once you open a package, you use the package. That's been my, I actually closed one again without vacuum sealing it because I've tested her garnishes. It's really great. These freeze dried, flavored, thin slices of orange and blood orange and stuff like that. Really good on an old fashioned Jack. Anyway, if you open that package and don't use them all, they end up floppy. So that's the deal. What are you about to pull up? You pulling up the Excaliburs? Oh, we can't hear Jack. Why can't I hear Jack?
No, okay.
Jack is muted.
I had muted because the F-35 was shaking the freaking roof of the house. When I look at these new Excaliburs, I'm like, I want one. But I have no reason to buy one because the one I have worked completely perfectly, and I just bought new tray liners for it. I will tell you, I got on this idea, like, there had to be some cool shit you could make for snacks for keto, and I found somebody that said to dehydrate pepperoni. Don't do that.
Doesn't work.
I'll put it a different way. You can try it, and it might work, and you might like it. It wasn't terrible. If you do it, you need to come up with, like, your own tray liner thing, because it puts a coating of this sticky goo on your tray liners. And that's why I had to buy new ones. I finally gave up. Like, I ran them through the dishwasher. I did everything I could. And they still just have this gross.
Borax.
Borax?
Did you try borax?
I did not.
Borax in a brush.
Borax in a brush. I ordered new ones. I'm throwing them away.
You're like, I'm done. I'm throwing it's too them much away. Work.
Because the tray, the rigid part, that cleaned fine.
Yeah, and no, the plastic light, floppies.
Holy things. They're. Like, $35 for 9-pack. Garbage.
Yeah, that goo is the oil.
Yeah.
It's got too much fat to dehydrate well. Fat does not dehydrate.
Yeah.
It's the same thing in a freeze dryer. If something's super fatty, you're just going to end up with goopy fat and some dried stuff in between it.
Yeah, Steve at Serious Keto, he screwed me. He said it worked great. He lied.
Maybe his pepperoni doesn't have fat.
I don't know what you would get no fat pepperoni. I don't understand. That doesn't make sense to me. But
yeah.
We did like a full 9-tray load too, so they're all gross. Like, that's like never again.
Yep. Ask me how I know things are kind of fun. Lee had a really good ask me how I know story earlier, but now I can't remember what it was. But
I trusted him. That dick.
I trusted you, right? I trusted you and it didn't work. It
don't
ruined
trust
all my
verify.
Stuff.
That's a Bitcoin thing. Don't trust verify. But when I verified, it sucked. That's what happened, right? I should have made one tray and seen how they came out. But
so here's a tip from Art by Lee related to this. The mesh mats are a pain to wash with drippy things like marinated jerky. I got the silicone solid mats, but they take twice as long because the air can't go through the undersides.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Stainless steel, I think, is the way to go. I think that's why they switched. Because stainless steel, you just whip them in the dishwasher, right?
And yeah.
Stack
well, you can use a brush
tray.
On them, and they're stiff, so they're not wobbly.
Yeah, I'm thinking about trying to make some for mine, because I'm not paying $35 a piece for them. I could barter mine, and then I could use whatever money I get to buy a new one.
Do you want a new one?
Not really. I want one, but I know I don't need one. They look cool. Come on. They look
cool. They look
cool,
but are they still as repair? This is my other question on new stuff like that, even our trusted brands. Are they as repairable?
I don't know.
As the old ones? Like, my dad decided he doesn't want his truck anymore, and I said, great. It's a 2002 Chevy Silverado 4x4.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'd be glad to drive that truck. And I had it for less than a week and the alternator went, and it took the redneck about 7 minutes to pull it off and put the new one on, maybe 15 mm-hmm. minutes. He was just like, I'm going to poke at this and see. And I thought, you know, on any other car I've had in the last 10 years, I would end up having to go to the mechanic because there's so much crap in the way that I'm like, I'm not dealing with it. So.
Yeah. And the alternator historically has been one of the easiest parts to swap out.
Yeah.
Right. Like, when everything went to serpentine belts and they decided for some reason the alternator needed to be at the bottom instead of the top, usually it was a couple of bolts, one belt, slap it back on, hook it back up, start the car, gun. So I'm glad that was able. I'll tell you another though thing to do is use AI when you're buying used vehicles. I was just thinking about buying like a 2500 Chevy. I can't think of the trim, but it's what JR has. One of my relatives he's being sent to Japan for the Air Force, and he has a 2015 Silverado Texas Edition LTX. And I'm like, you know, body wise about the same size. It's not a 2500, but this is really like a travel with the dogs truck. And I started doing some research on it, and apparently those trucks have a transmission that's somewhere between 130 and 190,000 miles just kills itself. It just like starts shedding metal inside itself and it dies, and it's about a $9,800 repair job to rebuild it, only to reset to do that again another 100 and some thousand miles later. And he's got 150,000 on it. And the price he wanted was fair, and the guy, this is one of those guys that like, the truck looks like it came off the showroom yesterday. Like, he just takes care of everything. And he's like, but I really baby. And I'm like, yeah, but that's not going to, this is a internal engineering problem. So what's that worth to know that so you don't buy that truck? So like the thing to do with that is put everything you know about the truck in and say, are there any known major mechanical issues with this vehicle? What are they and what do they cost to fix? And it basically said, if he rebuilt the transmission already, friggin' 16 grand, just buy it. If he didn't, don't. And I don't generally let bots tell me what to do, but in this case, the bot was right. Yes.
Aaron says, or who was it? Somebody said they have a 2021 something Ram 3500. Can't wait to sell it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny because like the 2019, this has been my conundrum is I do like the 4Runner. Okay. And the problem is the new 4Runner is not the one I like. And when I decided I liked the 4Runner, I was like, but I really like the 2019.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
I like the even older one. We had two of them. And the first one I liked better than the second one. And we bought the first one, I think in 2013.
Yeah.
I think it was a 2014. And what I liked about it better was the way the seats went down to make the back area. The newer models, the seats are raised up instead of flat, all the way flat, all the way.
Oh, yeah. So you have the tilt.
Yeah, it's stupid. Why would you do that? It didn't make any more room for anybody. It actually made less room when you're using the cargo space, but it made no more room for the passengers. So I don't know why they did it.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm always like kind of haunting the 4Runner market and
always
thinking that I have trust issues about other people's cars. But
yeah. I told Wesley on that truck, sell it to somebody you don't know. That's fine.
There's always a trade-in option.
Yeah, sell to somebody you don't know. Well, that's the problem. He doesn't want to take the vehicle to Japan. They can only take one. They can only take one. And I won't say. It's a family thing. I'll tell you something later.
Yeah. Lee says, I'm getting to the point I'd rather replace the transmission on an 07 RAV4 than buy an Orwellian. Now, I killed a RAV4. John watched me kill it, I'm pretty sure. A couple years ago. I'm really good at killing cars. Like, I should be the tester for cars that aren't supposed to be killable.
You killed a Subaru.
I've killed two Subarus.
I knew that, but I wasn't going to throw you that far under the bus.
It's okay. I have a third one now that I do have for sale, and I haven't killed it yet. I've really been careful with this Subaru. But, yeah. It is what it is. It just means that, I mean, Subarus just blow up at 140, right? 140,000 to 170,000 Your head gasket is going to blow unless you proactively replace the head gasket, because the head gasket from the factory is a piece of crap. And then once you've done the head gasket, if you didn't ruin a bunch of other stuff in the process of blowing said head gasket, the aftermarket head gasket's way better. So it's almost better to get the car and pull it apart and put it on and then go.
But you can take an old 350 4-bolt main and the damn thing will run 600,000 miles if you change the oil in it.
Yeah, you just keep putting it. And it'll leak enough, you don't even have to change the oil. You just keep putting oil in it.
I had a car, John, that got a leak like that in it, yeah. And I would literally park it, and I would put a pan under it. This is back when I was broke. And I would, like, if it was sitting there all day, it would leak like a quarter of a quart. And then when I would come out, I would just open the hood and dump the oil back in.
I had 300,000 on a 96 Impreza. I never had an Impreza. It was a Honda Prelude. I had a kicking car, the Honda Prelude. I was the last owner of said Prelude. And it had a sunroof. And it developed a habit of, if you parked on a hill and then it rained and then you drove and then you came down a hill and then you stopped, it would pee on the person in the passenger seat, only down the back of their neck. And all my passengers hated that for some reason. But yeah. I sold it before I moved to Tennessee and got my first Subaru. Yeah. That was a known issue, by the way.
My worst thing that didn't work and I lived with was I had a Grand Prix. It was my first car, 75 Grand Prix in Pennsylvania, and the heater fan wouldn't blow. The heater worked, but the fan wouldn't blow, and we couldn't figure out how to fix it. And like, you have to tear the whole dash apart to try to get in at it, and it wasn't going to do that. So all the hack was, you turn the heat all the way up, and then you open the vents and drive. But, like, the first 5 minutes of driving in the morning, the window would keep freezing back up because the defroster would take time for enough air to come out of there to melt the window. So I literally, like, we used to spray that de-icer shit and breathe the fumes inside the car to get to school on time. Like, so that's the thing, like, I think that's part of why we don't tolerate all the bullshit with, like, 25-year-olds that cry about pricing. I know damn well you're not driving a car like that. Right. You didn't buy your first car with scrap copper money and, you know, have to spray de-icer on the inside of the window so that you could see to drive to school. You didn't do that. So when you tell me about money, I just don't want to hear your shit.
They've crushed all those cars.
Yeah. Cash for clunkers is a big part of the problem. They took something like 2 million vehicles off the road with that.
Yeah, all of your all-metal cars have been destroyed. That's why, I mean, you go buy a 1950 that's in nice running shape. I mean, it's 30, 40 grand for those things right now.
Yeah, yeah. Everybody wants a square body Chevy, John. That's all anybody wants anymore is a square body Chevy.
I've got a 91 Ford. Yep.
Everybody wants them. And there's a reason. They don't just look good. They last. And they were easy to work on. That was the big thing, man. They're just easy to work on. Like, if you get under the hood of a pickup truck made before 1971, you're like, you don't have to know anything. You can just kind of look at it and be like, oh, I see what that, okay, and there's a bolt there, and this thing broke, so I don't even know what it's called, but you put a new one in. But now getting parts is really hard, especially from the junk, because they also, with that cash for clunkers, I don't know if you know this, they didn't just crush cars. They had to render the motors inoperable. They had to basically dump sand into them while they were running and seize them up. Yep. So if you have one of those cars and you need parts for it, now it's really a lot harder to get them.
So how about all the car, all the pickup parts and everything that are catching on fire? I know we had this conversation, I think, last time, but a lot of them simultaneously in multiple states all in the same week popped up and burnt down all of those. And you have people supposedly, I mean, who knows who they really are, but there's people supposedly, there's a video of a lady said, hey, we went to get this part at the junkyard. And when we showed up, they said, we were told by the government, we have to actually destroy all these motors and we can't actually sell these motors. They were pulling a whole motor out.
Yeah.
And I never pursued that or flushed that out any further. So I don't know if that's real, but there was a lot of videos there for a few days like that.
Yeah, I don't know. I know that I like driving newer cars because it feels nice to drive them. But every time there's a repair on one of these older ones here and it's literally bolt apart and you're done, I'm like, why did we have to go where? And there's enough space where a hand can get in.
Oh, yeah.
That's the other thing. It's like the new, you open it up and it's like, I can't even, it's big and I can't,
yeah,
like put my little girl hands in there. Maybe they're not little girl hands, but still.
I had a 79 Chevy Custom Deluxe half ton that I bought from a farmer who had driven it until he blew the 350 in it up. And the straight sixes they used to put in Novas will bolt right up to a 350 turbo transmission. So he did a little welding on the frame for the engine block and threw a straight six from a Nova in that truck. And it wasn't fast and it wasn't powerful, but you know what it was easy to do? Work on. I mean, you had a straight six underneath the hood of a full-size pickup.
Yep.
You could climb in there like a monkey and work on stuff. It was so easy to work on. It also was hell when you needed a part because, you know, what do you need the part for? You know how the parts guys are. They're retarded. They're like, yeah, I need 3 foot of fuel line. What's the model? Is it four-wheel drive? Like, bro, I need 3 feet of one-quarter inch fuel line. Look, here, it's right here. Just, you can't ring it up. It's like, put whatever you want in there. It says it's the wrong part. Fuck, I don't care.
Yeah, that's a whole different thing, that whole.
It's a Nova. What year? I don't know. The farmer that put it in the Chevy truck didn't tell me that. Brain lock, you know.
Yeah. But that would be sad if all those engines are getting smished, because those things go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, Toyotas used to go forever, too.
Yeah.
They're still your best bet, it seems like, right now.
I would agree with that.
Yeah.
It doesn't give me great pleasure to crap on our big three automakers, but dependability, reliability. I mean, look what we drive. We drive a Tacoma or a Tundra, whichever the smaller one is.
A T1?
Tacoma.
The littler truck. I think
it's the Tacoma.
Tacoma. It's the Tacoma. Yeah.
I know way too much about models of Toyotas because I've been haunting that brand for a while.
Yeah.
I have a Tundra that's the size of a Tacoma.
Okay.
The old, like, old one.
Oh.
Yeah.
Old.
So it's really funny when I'm next to another Tundra and it's towering over me.
What's really nice, if you could find one, are the old 4Runners, like 80s 4Runners. If you can find one of those, just... People that have them know what they got, and they don't want to get rid of them. It's not even it's not for sale type of thing.
Yep. I like the Sequoia. I really like the 4Runner.
We need to buy something. That's why I was thinking about buying this guy Wesley's truck. We want to travel with the dogs, and we want a truck that you can put that seat up, and you got a big flat platform back there with them. So that's what we're looking for.
Yep. Ian says the hauler needs a Hilux.
With a 50 cal mounted in the back?
They're supposed to be bringing those. I think they were talking about even U.S. making them, but the mini trucks, and you can get them plated. And they have a turbo diesel in them, and they're calling them Hiluxes. And that Hilux line is A-trucks. But they say they're going to hit the U.S. market at 10, but it's going to be closer to 2022. They've already brought some in from Canada on loan for companies to fabricate parts for them. That's how they're getting in the United States right now. They're showing up at the Overland Expos and stuff because, like, CBI has them and Victory Off-Road gets them for a six-month loan to build parts for. But I've not seen any actually purchasable in the United States yet.
Yeah, I had a Mighty Max here for a while. That was a fun little one, but it died.
Yeah, you can play them. I mean, even side by sides. You go to Franklin, the most expensive, you know, town in all of Tennessee, probably. And guys, they play those. They're running around on 4-seat, you know, Razors and 2-seats. I've got plates on mine.
For what they charge for the damn things, they should be considered a car.
Yeah.
You see one sitting out in front of a feed store or something, you walk up, oh, maybe I'll buy one of you. $18,000. You get out of here. $18,000 for
$18,000
motorcycle.
Yeah, that's the generics. I mean, you look at the North Stars. They have glass windshields, wiper blades, heater, air conditioning. Yeah. I can buy a Toyota truck for what that thing costs.
Yeah, and I'm not doing it, you know.
Yeah, we're retrofitting a Jeep for the pasture hill instead of using a side by side at this point. What's easier that? To steer. We're retrofitting a Jeep for going up that pasture hill. I mean, it can now.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's how we get livestock off the side of the hill when we have to throw it in the back of the Jeep. And it is easier to still steer on that hill than a side-by-side because it's got the power steering.
I know whenever I talk to guys that use the ATV or UTVs on their ranches or whatever, they're constantly repairing them. They're like, however many you need, it's like a 3D printer.
Have more.
One or two extra. So one can be broken and you have time to fix it while you have another one to do your job. But they're, you know, they're using it every day, all the time.
Yeah, that's a valid approach. We have 2 four-wheelers. One works right now.
One reason them little Bronco 2s from the 80s are so hard to find is people figured out how to use those that way. And what they would do is put a little bit bigger tires on them so they would handle the off-road stuff without sinking. And they took a torch and just cut the roof off them. And I've probably seen 3 dozen of those in my life done up that way. And that's why they're all gone. And it's all like all the like hunting ranches in Texas, a lot of them use those. Like the smaller ones that are focused more on like wild boar and stuff like that. That's inevitably what they're going to have is some little old Bronco 2 with the roof cut off it. I kind of want one of those. Like if I could get my hands on one, I would use that as a utility vehicle any day.
Yeah. That just makes me think of a Jack meme. We need to draw the Jack meme in the Bronco.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the meme that David made of me driving the Oscar Mayer wiener.
The hot dog truck? One was epic. I saw one of those. I was so tempted. There was one of those for sale for like $11,000. And I'm like, I think I need a hot dog truck. I do, but I didn't buy it. But I was just like, what can we do with the hot dog truck? We could have a lot of fun with this. Yeah.
Fishing at the Calf Killer River. I don't know what that's all about. That sounds fun.
Yeah, we have a river called the Calf Killer. Also a brewery. He's going fishing today. He's self-employed and he's figured out the hack. If you're going to do river things, you do river things during the week and you work on the weekend here.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
That's
way better.
Or is that Ryan?
That's Ryan. Yeah.
Good for you,
that's
Ryan.
Not Kerry.
I'm going fishing this week. Taking my son, my grandson. We're going out to Galveston, and we're going out 2 days in a row with a guide. We're going out for sharks one day and like mixed stuff the next day.
Cool. I bet he's looking forward to that.
Yeah, and we're leaving Thursday. I'm kind of emulating that hack. Go when everybody's still working.
That is the thing to do.
Hot dog truck, fancy camper. Yeah, that'd be interesting. Turn it into an RV.
And then park it and Airbnb it.
Actually, that might work. People love staying in them little
in weird stuff.
Airplanes. Yeah.
Yeah. I stayed in a caboose at like a train car in Chattanooga. Uh-huh. There's a hotel that has them. I had to go check that out, of course.
All the way back when I joined the Army, that's when they put you up the night before you left in Scranton at the MEPS. They were all train cars. Whatever they made the deal with the military to provide housing or whatever, overnight housing.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool. As long as you have a way to get it where you want it to go, if there's some tracks around or something. How do you move a freaking train car?
On a low boy and a crane, and then you put them in place. Typically, they're gonna put track on so that you have to set it on track. So you need cross ties, gravel. Yeah. You're basically to build a single section and set them in place.
I'm surprised to hear John's already looked into this.
There's a lot of them around.
Mm-hmm.
I can see John at Christmas with an actual track all the way around the perimeter running.
So there was we had CSX, we had holding ponds that breached during a little flood and knocked some trains off and traumatized some of the conductors. And they all got a pretty big payout, but one of the dudes didn't go back to work and he actually put light rail on his property. He retired off of that when the insurance paid out or whatever. Like, it drowned a couple dudes in some of the cars in the engines. But this dude, I think he's in Chattanooga or somewhere around there, but he has like a mile loop of actual small light rail gauge train that he runs around on.
That's, I mean, I could see you having a loop around your compound just to move stuff all the time. Because whenever I'm there, I'm walking in circles. That's what you do.
Yeah, we just use trailers. Like, the property's, it's not big. But if you look at how much point to point I do during the day by using the four wheeler, it probably saves on an average any given day between a half hour and an hour of actually just walking.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And then having a piece of equipment with forks, having the skid steer, we use that every day. We use that just putting stuff on pallets and just putting it where we need it.
On that line, I have news.
News.
I have been looking for a skid steer for, with help of somebody for years, and we might finally be getting one here.
You'll enjoy it if you do.
Oh, I know. Believe me, I know.
You need tracks. You need tracks, not wheels.
Yeah, it's tracks is the only option. That's one of the requirements that has slowed the process down. For sure.
Yeah, anywhere you're not flat, you got to have tracks.
Yeah. Well, especially as much as it's rained. Like, this year's been a reminder of how much it can rain in Tennessee.
Yeah.
Yep.
El Nino. Yep.
That is what it is.
You know, the thing about years like this with that weather pattern, you get all spoiled by it because you get more rain in the spring and it's cooler. And then the middle of summer comes and it's not cooler anymore. Then it's hotter. So we got through June this year like, I'm like, This is
awesome.
Like, yeah, is this even Texas? Like, did we move and I don't know it or something? And then July came and it's like, no, we didn't forget you, man. Don't worry. We're back now. So now we have no rain, but humidity and 104 degrees. So the best of all worlds, right? I mean, that's just, it's like when the weather guy comes on and it says the humidity factor is yuck and it's like a sad face. That's never good.
That's just standard here this summer.
Yeah. It's not. How was, the only good thing about being here is it's not humid in the summer. And this year, it's humid in the summer.
But I bet your garden responded really well. Like, yeah. My garden got ignored, and it still responded well.
It's definitely helped. The cooler temps early on and the sheer volume of rain. But with my irrigation, I attribute what I got more to soil health than anything else. Because it's... The things are not just growing well, they're growing different. I don't even know to explain, you know, some of the leaf forms have changed.
That's cool.
That's Alan Booker stuff, you know?
Yeah, Alan Booker stuff is happening here too. John, did you have a crazy abundant peach crop this year? Because I had the biggest one this year for some reason. Like, and I've not even really had one.
No, our pears have been really good. Our apples are good, but... We had one tree, but our trees are staggered, right? It's like 1 year, 2 year, 3 year. You'll have a great crop, you'll have a little crop, and then you'll have a little crop, and then boom, it just explodes again. But we pulled out, when we set this building in place, we pulled out our six biggest, oldest peach trees. So we have five or six. One, you know, we pulled a bucket worth of peaches off of it.
Mm-hmm. Are you using those or just feeding them to the animals?
No, I just kind of drive underneath them every day and eat a couple of them.
that sounds like something.
Our pears have done really well. We have a lot more pears, and then our fig trees are massive. Our figs, all they'll come on in the next few weeks. We'll probably start eating figs.
Yeah, John has the best fig hedge I've seen in Tennessee. It's not a tree, it's a hedge.
Yeah, yeah, the row house, we just had little potted ones that went in the row house, and they're taller than I am right now.
I have one little teeny fig this big right now. Still alive! That's all we've got. It's going to get very mulched this winter, and hopefully we'll do it. But we had crazy peaches, and then next door I have one more peach tree that hasn't started ripening yet that it's about to. So, yeah. I'm not sad about that. Jack, how's your peach crop going?
I have asked for fruit this year. I mean, half my fruit trees died anyway years ago, and I quit planting them. But the stuff that survived, what happened this year, everything flowered, and then we had a late frost.
Oh.
And we had one of those frosts. It's not really a frost. It's a freeze where you go out, and you're like, well, the flowers are still on. You touch them, and they're physically frozen, and that's, yeah, you're wiped. We got a few pears on the one tree and what have you. I've kind of given up on fruit. This property just kills things. And so I figured out what it does well, and I focus on that now. And that's just a lot of money sunk into stuff that I wish I wouldn't have done now. But if you don't have soil, it turns out it's really hard to grow fruit. It's, you know, just is. You have to have at least, and when I say soil, I'm not talking about good soil, folks. If you don't know my situation, I'm talking about dirt, anything. I've got half my property's 4 inches, and then it's solid rock. It's like a parking lot.
Yeah, fruit trees don't like that.
No. And what happens is, to keep them alive when you have a really tough year like we did the last two, you have to be constantly watering them. I mean, you can soak the ground, and the next day it's bone dry. And it gets to a point where, you know, I got one well, I got 3 acres. You just, all right, you guys get to live, and everybody else, you're on your own. Good luck. Stun method, Mark Shepard style. Except here, stun is more like murder.
It's like burn up.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like growing in hell.
Yeah, it's just not the property to turn into a food forest. It just doesn't. So I've been playing with my, you know, aquatic stuff a lot more. Had amazing success this year with the marble crayfish reproducing. Until one little freaking green heron, and I didn't know he was doing it, cleaned 3 of my tanks almost completely out. And a green heron is little, but it's not the big ones. They're a little bitty thing. They don't even weigh a pound. And they're very patient, and they'll just sit there. And but they're little, but they got long legs, so a 2-foot-deep tank, they can get right in it. And I also had one of my systems pretty well drained, and like one of the things, the pipes was turned and spitting water out, and I'm like, when I found him, I'm like, oh, you little bastard, you did it. So
he's like, I'll just drain this tank so I can get the fish better.
Yeah, it'll be easier to get the crayfish I get. And one thing I'll tell you about the marble crayfish, they're considered an invasive species risk. If you live somewhere where any water from your system goes into natural water, you will create an invasive situation. Because any system I put them into, now I'm not going to create that. I have no surface water. But you put them in the top tank, they end up in all the tanks. So when they're little, those overflows, they must like to just, you know.
Go surfing?
Go, well, like we used to do at water parks, right? Like Wet n Wild. Like, shoo-boo. And, you know, that's bad for them because some of the lower tanks, there's a reason I didn't put them in there. So they're feeding the fish just like the shrimp do. But I might actually present on those this year at the workshop because
that's good.
It's been – And I knew I had a problem because I was taking like surveys of population. I have a little trap. I throw like 4 algae wafers in there, set a timer for 15 minutes, go back and pull it out. And it was just, and you throw one in there for an hour and there's like one in there. You're like, what the hell happened?
What happened?
I caught him. I caught his ass. Hopefully he won't be back. He got horrified in a way.
Oh, there's always the mesh top.
Yeah.
We have some mesh tops here.
Yeah,
it's not the most eloquent of solutions, but
you know, and I keep them indoors too, so I always have a reserve restocking capability. But they don't reproduce in a fish tank like they do out in a larger tank. Out in those larger tanks, they go nuts. Yeah, and I'm gonna start experimenting with, like, I got a supplemental feed and figuring out an inexpensive way to do it, and I found that a lot of crayfish farms. Not in our country, because we take forever to do anything here. They're supplementing feed with alfalfa. Apparently, they really like alfalfa. Well, you can buy alfalfa pellets super cheap. So I'm going to start playing with that and do some comparisons.
Hey, John, do your peaches have the mothworm things in them?
Yeah, all of them.
Okay, so I didn't know if you'd figured out how to keep that from happening.
Yeah, Tim knows how to do it, but you have to do it from the very beginning. A lot of times when you plant that tree, it's already on them as a little start. It's already there.
Okay, and there's nothing you can do after that?
Yeah, I think you can chemically kill them with a bug spray. People talk about clay and other things and clay keeping them out, but as soon as it rains, that clay comes off, so you have to reapply the clay. We just cut them. Like, you'll see where, you know which side it's on.
Yeah, I cut them out.
Yeah. Yeah, we slice them and then we put them on the dehydrator.
Yeah. I was wondering if him had cracked the code. What, Jack?
I was asking him, are you dehydrating them or freeze drying them?
Dehydrating them.
Oh, you're dehydrating. Okay.
But we freeze. We've got tons of them in the freezer.
Yeah, same. I have pre-made pie filling, even though I don't really eat pies very much. Maybe I'll bring one to your party on the 10th. Peach pie. That sounds good. All right. Well, it looks like we're coming up on 2 hours. You guys want to go once around the horn? Sure. Jack, why don't you go first?
All right, folks. I am Jack Spirko, host of the Survival Podcast. We have, what's today's episode? 3,877 episodes that we have for you over at the survivalpodcast.com, talking about all the things and more that we talked about today, from entrepreneurship to preparedness and surviving wildfires and investing and building businesses, you name it, we've talked about it.
All right. I'm Nicole Soss from the Living Free in Tennessee podcast and Hollow Roast Coffee. If you are interested in some live in-person training on fun topics, go to livingfreeintennessee.com and go to events. You can come out and learn how to run electric fencing for small ruminants or how to make condiments. Just depends on what tickles your fancy. That's at livingfreeintennessee.com. John, why don't you bring it out this time?
John Willis, my company, Special Operations Equipment. You can see what we actually do at soetacticalgear.com. I'm on this YouTube channel every night around 9 o'clock. There's some 7,000 videos. We do a bunch of different video series you can check out if you're interested.
Awesome. Great. We'll see you guys next month. Just run you round. They said you should have a house the American way. Dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way.